Welcome to the Playing Injured podcast, where we have conversations that help people turn their adversity into their advantage. Welcome to episode 80, where we sit down with Gregory Offner, who is one of the most in-demand experts on the topic of professional performance and navigating disruption. His clients include Fortune 100 companies, and he is often asked to keynote at conferences where industry leaders and executives turn to him for new perspectives on how to elevate performance, eliminate disengagement, and make work suck less. Greg has an interesting story that you'll be able to hear. He nearly lost the ability to speak permanently, but after enduring 15 different surgeries on his vocal cord and doing the work that it takes to fight through adversity, he found a lot of gratitude along the way, and it really helped change his life for the better. If you enjoy this episode, feel free to send this to one of your best friends, somebody in your inner circle that could benefit from this episode. And I hope you enjoy the show. Greg, how you doing?
Josh, I'm fantastic. Thank you for having me here. I'm excited.
I'm excited. And Greg, we always start the podcast with a question, and I'm very interested to hear how you answer it. But we start off with, who is Greg and how does he spend his time today?
Man, that's a question that a couple years ago would have been tough for me to answer. And I would have led with, Greg is a keynote speaker and an event MC. I travel the world. I love to spend time with my daughter. And I stopped doing that because I realized that identifying ourselves by what we do for a living really does put us in a box.
Yeah.
And when and if that changes, and for most of us, it'll change at some point in our life, we go through this crisis of identity. I went through that when I nearly lost the ability to speak. And I know we'll get into talking about that, but who I am, as I would say it now, I'm an avid ice hockey player. I love going to the gym. I already mentioned I love spending time with my daughter. I have an 18-month-old daughter. I love hanging out with my wife, going to stand-up comedy shows, and traveling has got to be a part of everything that I do. That, I think, really encapsulates who I am.
And I love that. I love that. Because, Greg, I want to kind of humanize folks that do great things, to help folks realize that they have that greatness inside them as well. But we all are people who, I may not like ice hockey, but I enjoy to play. I enjoy playing basketball. I enjoy going to comedy shows. I enjoy doing these small little things. But we all have this greatness inside of us. And so I want to kind of take the journey back to before almost losing your voice. What was life like before then?
It was messy. That's the best way to describe it. Well, I came out of school not knowing really where I wanted my life to go professionally, but had college loans like many people do when they come out of school, and they were about to come due. So I needed something. At the time, I was bartending. And someone encouraged me to go interview for this sales job, and I did, and really nice salary, and they gave you a car, and I wasn't making a lot of money and I had a really crappy car. So I thought, well, this sounds like a really great job. I'm young. I had plenty of time. The world was my oyster. And I started doing really well at this job, Josh. Like, I really took to it. And all of a sudden the money's flowing in. And in sales, if you're good at what you do, you can create a lot of free time for yourself. So all of a sudden I had more time than my friends that work the traditional 9-to-5, more money than some of them. I was like at the top of the world. But as I got further into the professional world, I realized that I believed I had to become somebody I wasn't, because I am not a professional wear a tie business guy, Greg. Like, that's just not, I don't fit in that box. And I kept trying to twist myself into this box because I thought it's what my employer wanted, what my friends expected of me. And it made me unhappy. And so I did what unfortunately a lot of people do, is I turned to alcohol and hanging out, drinking too late and smoking cigarettes and really just abusing my voice and my body to sort of mask that unhappiness. Now, I got lucky that I also had this opportunity to play the piano. I worked at piano bars pretty much right at the same time I got into the work world. So at night, a couple nights a week, I got to do something I really loved. But I didn't realize that I, you know, also speaking all day and singing all night, you know, that's kind of like expect, that's like how, you know, Ryan Howard, Phillies, former Phillies first baseman, like once you snap that Achilles tendon, you got to treat life differently. And it was hard for him to go back to pro ball. So I was like running 24/7, running my voice without rest. And in 2015, it broke. And for me, that was a moment where I got the world stopped, kind of like it did for a lot of people in March of 2020 when COVID hit. The velocity of life stopped for me. And I got to look around and decide, do I like where I am? Do I like who I've become? And it was at that point that I had the opportunity, sort of a get out of jail free card, to say, you know what, I'm going to use this pause in life while my voice recovers to really create a new life for myself.
I love that. See, one thing you and I have in common is that I actually did play the piano. I started off my life, first endeavor ever, playing the piano, right? And being a performer. And that's what you described yourself as, a performer. And, you know, as being a sales guy, you present, you're performing. We're always performing. And so now you have to stop. You have kind of what you call a disruption. What does that feel like in the moment? Like being told that you possibly will never be able to speak again. What does that kind of feel like? Paint that picture for us.
It's a death-like experience. And I don't want to take anything away from someone that may be struggling with a terminal diagnosis or actually facing death. I can't even imagine what that's like. But as someone who uses his voice to not only earn a living, but to really communicate what's inside of me through singing, my voice may as well be synonymous with my life. And so hearing that I may never have that again, in many ways for me, I don't think it's dramatic to say. It was like, it felt like what I'd imagine it feels like when you're told you're going to die, because it was that scary to me. I thought, I'm going to have to reinvent everything.
That's crazy. But it's a fictional, it's kind of like a figurative death in a way.
Yeah.
It's almost like if somebody is, they're an athlete and they get a career ending injury, it's almost like death. Life as you know it is over. Your passion, what you probably thought your purpose was at the time, you have to probably do that purpose in a different way now.
Well, and that's why I started off this interview when you asked who I am by saying, you know, I would have done this, but now I say this, because one of the reasons that it was that catastrophic for me, that it created so much pain and anxiety and uncertainty, was because I had wrapped up who I was in what I did. And that was the hardest thing to really unpack as this vocal injury started to play out and the path of my life changed, was I had no idea who I was. And that's a really scary place to wind up. And I think, you know, to your point, a lot of athletes probably go through that when they have a career injury. Their whole life had been leading up to where they were at that moment. And now you have to look in the mirror and go, if this isn't who I am, who am I? We're not really conditioned. Not most of us aren't. I know I wasn't. We're not really conditioned from a young age to think the way I now think. And I try to get others to think, which is not to identify with what we do, but rather to decide who we are, no matter what happens around us. It's a very tough change to make midlife. And I'm kind of on a mission. I know I am on a mission to help others see that. And when I get to talk to, you know, kids working in high schools or working in colleges, I'm envious of the opportunity they have, because if you start to develop these skills, these soft skills of really that allow us to see who we are, stripping away what we may have or not have, where we may live or not want to live, what we may do or want to do, strip all that away and there's still a person there. And talking to that person and helping build that person up is incredibly rewarding.
It is. And so it's a few things we can take out of that is not about what you do. And I've heard you talking about, it's about impact over income. Mm-hmm. Right. And so it's crazy that you took this kind of paradigm shift of actually thinking about impact over before what you were thinking about when it came to income. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. It's unsustainable to work for a paycheck. Mm. And let me unpack that, because that's probably maybe controversial, but at least a confusing statement for a lot of people to hear. I know it would be for me if I wasn't the one saying it. There are three types of people we run into at work: sleepers, leapers, and keepers. Mm. A lot of people fall into this category of sleepers. And the way I describe them is that they go to work for a check. For them, it's transactional. I show up at 8, I leave at 5 on Friday, check direct deposit better hit my bank account, or the check better be in my mailbox at work. That's how life works, right? Then there are leapers. Leapers go to work to create a career. And they're called leapers because very often where they are isn't where they're trying to get to. They're looking to leap to the next position, leap to the next organization. Maybe they work for a big company so that they can go to a smaller company and be a big fish in a little pond. Or maybe they go to work at a little company to get a big title so that they can leap into a larger company at a higher role than they may have been able to initially. But where they are is not where they are, full stop. They're not where they are mentally. They're not really there. Their mind is where they want to be next. Between the sleepers and the leapers, you're talking about 70 to 80% of most organizations' people.
Wow.
And then the remainder, the 20%, they're the keepers. For them, it's not about a check. It's not even a career. It's a calling. What they're doing is something they feel called to do. There's a deep purpose that they find and feel from what they engage in every day. They're the folks who absolutely love where they are. And when they're there, they are there. They are present. They're engaged. They're the type of people that every organization would do anything to hire. So we've got these three types of people. Only one is pursuing impact before income. Because even though the leapers aren't necessarily there for the check, they're looking for a different kind of reward. They're looking for the title bump. They're looking for the next job. It's the keepers who realize where I am allows me to do something really tremendous, really special. And I know that if I do this really tremendous, really special thing, they're gonna pay me. The money's gonna follow. So what would the world look like if we raised and cultivated and became the type of people who pursued impact first and understood that by doing so, the income's gonna follow? I think it'd be a pretty interesting place to live.
We've partnered with Magic Mind, which is the world's first productivity drink. Magic Mind was created by James Bashira, who is a Silicon Valley investor and entrepreneur. He combined all the ingredients in his kitchen that helped him stay productive and crush the business world, then gave it a sweeter taste before sharing it with the world. Magic Mind is made with all natural ingredients that help decrease stress, boost blood flow and cognition, and helps keep you focused. I typically drink Magic Mind in the morning with a cup of coffee, and it helps prevent that caffeine crash that most people feel, and it helps me stay focused throughout the day. So with that being said, go over to www.magicmind.co/injured and use the promo code injured for 20% off. Once again, go to www.magicmind.co/injured and use the promo code injured for 20% off.
100%, because we'll be looking to add value to others, right? I think a sleeper, he's kind of in a way looking to, hey, I don't want to overdo myself here. A leaper, he wants to just do it for himself. He wants to get to where he's looking to go. But a keeper, they just want to add value to others.
Yeah, that's absolutely fulfilled, right?
And so 70% of folks, in a way, are selfish. And it may not be maliciously selfish, but it's kind of their own interest versus a keeper who's actually looking to impact and add value to others, which if people realized what that felt like, it's an amazing feeling. It's what we get the opportunity to do, engaging with each other and adding value to others makes time go by extremely fast.
We were talking before we started recording about that new Lakers show and about Magic Johnson. And as you're talking, I can't help but think about what made Magic so special was the way he played ball was with an attitude of abundance. It wasn't about him getting the ball. He knew that there would be plenty of opportunities for him to get the ball. But what he saw as his goal was to get the ball to as many other people as possible, to set as many of his teammates up for success, because he knew that there would be a time when they could set him up for success. And that shift is really a shift from scarcity to abundance. It's this very destructive mentality when we talk about a scarcity mindset of, I'm going to get mine before somebody else does. And that's cultivated because some people benefit from others having a mindset like that. You make stupid decisions when you think that way. When we realize that there's enough out there for everybody, so long as we go out there each day looking to add value.
Yeah.
When we start to operate that way, not only do we become happier, healthier, wealthier, we find more fulfillment in what we do, we find that opportunities start to present themselves that we never even thought of. I mean, the work I do now is incredibly fulfilling to me personally, and it pays pretty good. I never would have had this opportunity if I hadn't put myself out there at an event that I wouldn't normally go to, ran into someone, chatted with them, wouldn't normally have struck up a conversation. In fact, this person turned around, started chatting with me. She and I kept talking as the concession line moved forward, and she's telling me her story, her like life story, and it's unbelievable what this woman went through to get where she is now. Just tremendous. And then she looks at me and she goes, so what about you? Like, what's your story? And Josh, I'm telling you, she had been through hell and back. And I looked at her and I said, I don't even think it matters. What you just told me is unbelievable. I can't believe I met somebody like you. This is so cool. Like, you're an inspiration. And she goes, no, I want to know about you. And I proceeded to tell her, I didn't know this person. Strangers are great for that, aren't they? You meet a stranger, and sometimes if you're just going through something, you just let it go because I'll probably never see you again. And
right.
And Josh, she looked at me, and I could see her eyes sparkle. And she goes, you don't see it, but I see the impact that you can have on others. All these parts of your life that you've compartmentalized and said have to be separate, you've made these rules that musician Greg can't overlap with businessman Greg, and the Greg who's interested in psychology and philosophy and really being a deep thinker, well, that person can't overlap with the Greg that's into stupid comedy and dumb stuff. You know, if you pull all these together, and she pointed at the person up on the stage speaking, we were at a conference, she goes, that could be you. You could be sharing a message that could help others. And I think you're just the guy to do it. And it was, Josh, like a bolt of lightning hit me in the head. And it was not just that I put myself out there. It's that she put herself out there. Mm. She started a conversation with a stranger. She came from a place of leading for impact and giving from abundance. And she wasn't scared that maybe I was going to take some speech that she might get one day. She knows there's plenty of conferences out there for everybody.
That's amazing. You know, it's crazy. It's a few things I get out of that is embracing your uniqueness. You may not have an extremely special talent, but we all have so many different traits that make us unique. And if we embrace our uniqueness, it becomes something special for the world to add. And then another thing is putting ourselves out there, right? To be able to give somebody a gift as what she gave you. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times we don't really understand who we are until somebody else tells us. I don't know, you know, us as humans, I don't know why. You know, some folks, you get some rare folks who do believe in themselves right off the bat. But obviously it's, and I think in almost all cases, somebody else in embeds that seed into your brain first.
So there's, you're right. And there's something that happens to us. And the best way to explain it is to talk about cars. Now, I'm not a car guy, but I remember 4 or 5 years ago now, I guess I got a Jeep Grand Cherokee, and I'd always wanted one. Man, I was like, when I have that car, I'll have made it. And I drove that car off the lot. I was so excited, Josh. I was like, I can't wait to go pick up my friends and show them this car. This is so cool. And I've had that car for 5 years, and it's just my car now. You know, it just is. It is what it is. I take it to the wash every once in a while. And we're like that because the person we see in the mirror every day has just become ordinary. But to someone else, what we're able to do, that gift we bring, that's extraordinary. It often takes somebody else looking at us. I mean, that's why some of the best players, performers, business people in the world had a coach or had a mentor that helped them get there, because somebody else outside of them, outside of their daily life, was able to recognize something and go, hey, if you don't cultivate this, it's not going to be just a loss to you. It's going to be a loss to the world.
Yeah, 100%. I believe it wholeheartedly. None of us are self-made. We all need some allies, a mentor, somebody that speaks life into us. Because life hits us and we can't just use our own brain. We need other brains to help us get along the journey. I love that. So from the three folks that you mentioned, we got our sleepers, our keepers, and then we have our leapers. I think I said it in the wrong order, but
that's all right.
People get the gist, right? But 70% of folks, from what it sounds like, and I've heard you mention this in other videos, other content and different things like that, is that people kind of play not to lose instead of playing to win in life. Right. Talk about that a little bit. I think.
Yeah. I mean,
it's safe.
Yeah, man. It's defensive decision making. I mean, you know, I played rugby in college. Maybe some people that are listening played football. I think it's probably applicable in basketball. I don't know about baseball so much, but my point is, we talk about time of possession. Having a good defensive game is great, but I'm pretty sure in almost all those sports I mentioned, you got to put points on the board to win. So when we operate from a standpoint or from a mentality of defensive decision-making, we're playing not to lose versus playing to win. And the problem with that is that the scape, the landscape, the gamescape around us is always changing. And I mean, I'm speaking from experience, because most of my professional career, I was working not to lose. I was trying to do just enough so I didn't lose the income that I had or the status, the position that I had, but I wasn't playing to win to get to the next level. And eventually the world changed around me. I mean, also my voice changed, but the world continues to evolve. So every day we try to stand still, the world moves two steps forward and it gets harder and harder to catch up. And I think that for anyone who's operating in that standpoint of, hey, I'm just trying to make it through the day. I mean, you're literally losing ground every day that you operate like that. And now as a new father, something that I've gained some perspective on that I learned too is, boy, if I had this attitude in my 20s, oh my goodness, when time seemed like, you know, as plentiful as water. And, you know, now if I can get a spare 30 minutes with my young daughter, you know, to do something for me or just whatever, relax, take a deep breath, I'm like, whoo, this was a really nice vacation. So if we use the time and the resources that we have and operate with not only a mentality of abundance, but with a mindset of what can I give to the day, not just get through the day, but what can I give to it? We can create some really, really special stuff.
So how did you do that, right? You said that you were almost supposed to lose your voice permanently.
Yeah.
Right. What was the process of not playing it safe and actually attacking, okay, I need to do something to attack this voice and so I can get it right, and also to change my life. So what was that kind of that mindset like, to not play it safe and to get on the offense of life?
I had to, what's the best way to frame this? I had to hit rock bottom to really be in a place where I was willing to abandon the way it is and pursue the way it could be. Because that defensive mindset had been so deeply ingrained in me. I was really fearful because I didn't believe in many cases that I had earned what I had. I had a really poor self-image, even though I could project. you know, when people saw me, they would have no idea. They're like, oh, Greg's this outgoing, like high achieving type A dude. And I looked in the mirror and saw fraud every day. I saw a guy that didn't belong where he was, who didn't deserve most of what he had. The only place I felt like me was on the stage performing. And I hadn't really taken the initiative to put my mind to figure out how I could turn that into a career. And maybe there was fear lurking behind that as well, that what if I tried and failed? What would that really say about me? Because at least I held on to the possibility that, well, if I really tried at this, I'd do it, but I don't need to really try because I got this day job. So it wasn't until, you know, a lot of motivational speakers will say, until you burn the boats. My boats got burned for me. And it wasn't until that happened, and I was 3 or 4 surgeries into this recovery process. And the way that that works is they cut into your vocal cords, they do what they need to do, and then you have to be completely silent for 2 weeks after every operation. And then your voice gets better just enough that you can start having regular conversation, and then they do it again. And it's this very punishing cycle where you start to feel like you a bit more. You know, maybe it's like if you mess your shoulder up and you can finally get back into the gym and throw some weight around, and then something else happens and you're out for another 6 or 8 weeks, and then you finally get back in. It's just, you're just like, come on, life, like, stop doing this. I hit the point where I'm standing waiting for the subway and just wondering if, you know, maybe in front of the subway would be a better place to be waiting. Wow. Maybe just saying goodbye to all this would be the answer. And thankfully, I wasn't so deep in a place where I was like, yeah, let's do that. My brain was like, hey, that's a really bad idea. You need to do something about that thinking. And I went and got help. But that was the moment for me where I said, this can't be what your life is. You've got too many people that care about you. You've got too many resources. You just need to figure out how to reapply and reassess your situation. And I needed help. I needed someone outside of me that didn't have the emotional baggage that I had in that moment, who was able to help me look rationally, objectively at what was going on. And in some ways, listen to me cry a bit, like listen to me kind of moan about my situation. And that's okay. We got to get that out.
Yeah.
Not toxic. This is not toxic positivity radio. Like, it's sometimes you guys just got to look and go, this sucks. Where I'm at sucks. Just be in that suck for a little bit. But then somebody sort of like kick you in the butt and say, okay, cool. So what are we going to do? Because quitting isn't an option and standing still doesn't do anything. So what are we going to do? That's what really helped me move forward. And it was a process. It was a messy, sweaty, time-consuming process. And there were nights spent crying. There were nights spent just sort of like, I don't have any hair because I tore it all out trying to figure out, all right, what's this going to look like? But, and it's still a work in progress. I think we're all works in progress. And COVID, to be quite candid, COVID knocked me back a couple steps. We found out in February of 2020, my wife was pregnant with our daughter, my first child. And then in mid-March, found out that my whole livelihood was maybe permanently on pause. We didn't know what was going on.
Yeah. As a speaker, right? As a speaker. Yeah.
Yeah. And so confronting, like, okay, I just made this huge life decision to support and grow another human with my wife. How am I going to provide for this person? Like, what does this now say? Do I have to give up everything that I've been pursuing? And it was time to sort of take my own medicine and get creative again. And it's still a work in progress because now things are changing again and we're getting back out there. And some of the stuff that I built is not as helpful as it was previously. So the mindset that's most important for folks who are listening to this to adopt is just a passionate belief and acceptance of the fact that change is constant. And the minute we're done in one change, the next change must begin. Because if it doesn't, we're falling behind. There is no status quo. It's a myth. It's maybe one of the most dangerous myths in the world. There's no number we're going to get to where, like, I'll be happy when, or I'll have made it when. Because I'm telling you, we get to that destination, because I've gotten to a few. We get to that destination and it's like, oh, like the car with the Jeep. It's like, oh, is that it? Just a car now.
Yeah. Yeah. And that final destination is the journey there is so much more powerful than just the actually getting it. It's almost like you said, it's like, oh, you enjoy it for a few seconds In some cases, it can just be a relief, right? Like, oh, I got it. But pursuing and actually going down the journey and realizing what the process is like is what makes things a journey and what makes it an adventure. I love how you mentioned, hey, it was hard. It was sweaty. Days you cried, you pulled your hair out, but it was an adventure and you got through it. And I kind of want to talk about gratitude, right? And going through those moments now and having gratitude and what the keys, a key of gratitude is to success. For some reason in my life, I've hit an epiphany where gratitude is something that I need to work on, right? And getting up in the morning, I've practiced, hey, wow, we have an amazing day to add value to others. We have an amazing day in front of us, right? Instead of the alarm goes off and I'm mad that the alarm went off a little bit earlier than I thought it would be, right? Talk about gratitude and how it actually affects success in folks.
So, yeah. Well, so let me ask, Josh, what does that look like for you? Because you said you wake up and you're grateful for, you mentioned two things. So like, what, do you write it down? Do you, what is that? What does your practice look like?
So it, my practice was, I saw something in my days where I would wake up, the alarm would hit. I get up early and I'm like, ah, right. As opposed to actually switching that thought and waking up out of bed and being excited that I get an opportunity. You know, I'm choosing to wake up earlier because I have an opportunity of adding value to others and putting more on my plate because I'm blessed to do so. Right. And so when I get that, that practice of just changing that mindset, I don't write it down. I do think I need to start to scribe and write that down. But for me, it's just a flip of a mindset of, hey, this is great. I get an opportunity to wake up early, not, I got to get up early and do these different tasks. It's like, no, I get an opportunity to wake up and actually enjoy, because there's folks out here who wish they had an opportunity to wake up and do things that they're proud of, and they don't. So having that gratitude is amazing for me.
I'm just being quiet because this is maybe hitting me at a time when I need to hear it. And this is for everybody listening. It's why gratitude's a practice. You know what I mean? It's not. So with an 18-month-old daughter, and I'd say this has been going on for several months, right? Mm. We got a baby monitor that we, you know, sleep with in our rooms. And dude, she wakes up crying. It's just, that's how babies wake up. You know what I mean? She wakes up like babbling for a little bit, like, oh, I'm in a good mood. But when she's been in the crib for, I guess, longer than she's decided she wants to be, she just starts crying and screaming. And I have been really just feeling anxiety when she does that. This sort of not being grateful, but rather feeling upset, like, oh, she's crying again. Like, all right, let's get up. And this is, I mean, it's so funny that you're sharing this, because I'm now seeing her as that alarm clock, that it's actually a signal. If I reframe the signal as, this is an opportunity for me to get up and add value to her day, to be an important first part of her day, I can condition myself, and it's not going to happen tomorrow, but it can start, this process can start tomorrow, to get to a point where instead of that crying triggering something inside me that creates anxiety or upset, it actually creates some excitement. And that's what gratitude is a practice, at least to me, Josh. That's what it is. It is a very deliberate way of changing the way we look at things, because our natural conditioning, and some people may already know this, our default is to danger. Our default awareness setting is to stuff around us that could be dangerous. And it's a very ancient setting. It lives in a part of our brain called the amygdala. And it is associated with the fight or flight response in our nervous system, the parasympathetic nervous system. Gratitude hijacks that signal and turns the volume down. But the way that we create the ability to do that is slow and deliberate. And in the field of positive psychology, there's an exercise called the three blessings. And you've kind of described what it is. But so it's every day. At the end of the day, at the beginning of the day, twice a day, it doesn't really matter. It's just that we do it. Write down three things you're grateful for. And initially, the smaller, the better. And I had the opportunity to put this into practice right after my wedding. So I got married in January of 2018, and we were supposed to go to Africa the following day for a 2-week long honeymoon, just sort of checking out the continent. I'd never been before, super excited, heard from a bunch of people like Zimbabwe, Zambia, South Africa, unbelievable place to visit, unbelievable people. Super, super excited. And we were going to go through the Middle East on the way there. So like just the trip of a friggin' lifetime that we had set up for our honeymoon. And on the very last dance of our wedding reception, on the very last song, the very last verse of this song, I jumped up in the air and broke my foot on the way down. Yeah. So there I am in a pile on the dance floor, broken foot, can't stand. Go to the ER the next morning because nothing was like sticking out. So my best man was like, dude, you're not going to the hospital tonight. We'll get you good and drunk. You go in the morning. So in the morning, I literally hop in an Uber and run over to the hospital. And the doctor says, yeah, your foot's broken in two places. You can't get on a plane. Like you're going to need several weeks for this to heal. So my wife and I had to confront not being able to go on our honeymoon. And for me, as someone who's very physically active, this is several weeks now out of the gym, just kind of laying up, being useless around the house, not even really able to walk around and do what I want. It was really difficult to get around. And at the time, we lived in a row home in Philly, so like lots of steps, no matter where you're trying to get to. One of the things that I started doing after I took a day or two to just be like, this sucks, this is the worst, I'm mad about this, because that's really healthy. Not forever, but for a little bit, I started to look down at my right foot, because I broke my left foot. I started to look down at my right foot and go, hey, look at that, my right foot. I can wiggle my toes. I can move it side to side. It's pretty cool. I got a right foot. And it's stupid. People are probably listening, rolling their eyes and going, this dummy. Like, it is kind of dumb. But it's the way to start retraining our nervous system. Not to see danger as the first thing, but to see opportunity. That's really what gratitude is. Gratitude is recognizing opportunity versus noticing obstacles. And so if we start out small, it doesn't send our brain into complete shock. Starting out small gives us the ability to go, you know what? I'm grateful that I have the ability to work in a comfortable home. And I have everything I need to do my job right here at my home. I am grateful for that opportunity.
Yeah.
Write that down. I am grateful to have people in my life, my wife, my child, my parents who love me. Write that down. I am grateful that I have a cold Dr. Pepper in the fridge. Write that down. It can be silly. It doesn't matter. The point is to have fun with it, but do it every day. And as we cultivate that skill of gratitude, I'm not going to say it becomes second nature because it's always a practice,
but
it becomes easier and more powerful. It builds the first couple of weeks. You're kind of like, okay, when's something going to happen? When am I going to feel better? It takes a little while, but that consistency is key. Like mastering a jump shot, understanding how to wrap properly for a tackle, like whatever the metaphor is that makes sense for you. If you're listening, little baby steps to get started.
Yeah, I love that. And what's, it is a practice. And what one thing that's just crazy about human nature is that most positive things we do have to practice, right? And negative things, just it seems like they just come automatically. And mm-hmm. it'd be great if it's the other way around. But no, that's great. That's great. So what last thing I want to chat with you a little bit about is performance, right? The laws of performance and how folks can perform better at whatever they're doing today. And so we'd love to leave folks with some tips on how can they perform better in whatever endeavor they are currently doing today. Because I think it's important. And I think we all are performing to some degree. So we'd love to hear.
So it's interesting that you bring up this idea of performance, because, you know, not only playing sports, but being a musician growing up, we do some stuff differently than just like the average person, don't we?
Yeah,
like we do some really weird stuff. And something that I've noticed that performers do that we could apply to the business world or maybe even just recognize in our own life is that when we choose something we want to do, the first step is we practice it. And then for many of us, the next step is that we rehearse it. And I'm going to dig into the difference between practice and rehearsal. And Allen Iverson's going to come up here. This is a perfect example of bringing AI.
I love it.
And then we go out and we perform. Now, here's why these are such important distinctions. Choose, practice, rehearse, and perform. Because we, first of all, what we choose to do is important. You know, if you decide you want to be a football player and you choose the first thing you're going to learn ever when you decide you want to be a football player is a spinorama, you are probably not going to be a very good football player. You should probably learn to catch the ball or maybe tackle at least. So we need to then break down that choice into its basic elements, right? You're probably not going to start out learning how to catch a long bomb 60-yard pass, right? You're going to start just regular, how do I catch the ball properly? So practice is breaking that skill that we want to learn down into very manageable parts. Great example would be basketball. You don't practice a basketball game. You practice inbounding. You practice your free throw. Those are all components of the game of basketball, but they're not the game itself, right? When we get to the game, right, what in sports you call an exhibition or a scrimmage, what in music you call the rehearsal, that's when we put that practice that we've done one-on-one alongside our teammates or our ensemble or our bandmates or our colleagues. That's when we then put that in what should ideally be a high-pressure, low-risk situation. And then finally, when we perform, that's a high-risk, high-pressure situation. But if we do it right, we can lower the pressure on the performance. That's a lot there, so let me just go back and sort of hit it. So when we choose a skill, the next step is we want to practice it. We want to break it down into manageable parts and really start to build competency in those parts. It's best if we have a coach that can give us feedback from time to time on that practice so that we're not practicing the wrong things. I think it was John Wooden who separated his players into three groups. One group, he said, for 2 weeks, I don't want you to touch a basketball. What I want you to do is go home and visualize yourself making free throws. Visualize it perfectly. And if you mess up on a visualization, do it over again until it's perfect. Visualize perfect shot every time. The second group, he said, for the next 2 weeks, you're going to show up here 3 hours a day. All you're going to do is shoot free throws all day. The third group, he said, see you in 2 weeks. Don't even think about basketball. Now, who do you think did the worst when they came back?
The third group.
Yeah. Sure. Terrible. They were awful. So out of practice. Who do you think did the best? I would think it the people that came and showed up a couple hours every day and did free throws, but it was actually the people that visualized it. They saw themselves doing it perfectly. So when we rehearse, if we've practiced effectively with a coach getting feedback, doing it right, when we go rehearse, we're not seeing if we can get it right in the rehearsal. What we're doing is creating the foundation so that we perform effectively. And here's where the pressure differential comes into play. When sports teams practice for a big game, or even any game, I think, especially in the NFL, I guess they're all big games, they do their run-throughs. They do their scrimmages with, you know, like AC/DC blaring through the speakers, really distracting noises with strobe lights going off in the building. Because that's not going to happen during game time. But if they can learn to get through a game with all of that distraction, then the pressure is a bit lower. The conditions are a bit easier on game day. That's that difference between rehearsal and performance. When you do that rehearsal, there should be as many distractions as possible. Make it really tough. If it's a sales call, ask ridiculous questions. Put ridiculous objections in front of your salespeople. Because if they can handle that, if they can handle the high pressure there, when they're in front of the customer, it's going to be easy. And that allows them to really enjoy that performance. Now, this all starts with what we chose to learn. And I think now more than ever, it's so important that we choose skills that make us better as people, not just better individually, that really help us become the best that we can be as people. I'm sorry, not just professionally. Choose skills that help us become better as people, not just as employees. And then we practice them. Like gratitude is a great one to practice. and then we rehearse it. You know, could you work yourself up into a frenzy on purpose? You know, get yourself mad, like really think about stuff that makes you mad and upset to the point where you're like shaking and boiling and go, now I'm gonna go do my gratitude exercise. I'm gonna go write down three things. Whoo! If we can do that, boy, just at the end of a regular day, it should be easier to pick out things that we're grateful for.
Yeah, 100%.
So that series of choose or learn, practice, rehearse, and perform is what I call the performer's process. And I've got a video series that I want to offer up to your listeners. No charge, no email, BS, or nothing like that. Just you can get the videos. If they text perform, the word perform to 33777, it'll just drop them a link. I think it'll ask for their email, and then I'll email them a link to that video series where I explain that in a bit more detail. But that's a really powerful tool to perform at our best.
So text perform to 33777.
Nope, 33777.
33777.
That's the one. Yep.
33777. Text yes. Perform. I love it. I love it. Where else can folks find you at, Greg?
Yeah, thanks for asking that question. I'm on all the major socials. So, you know, just type in Gregory Offner Jr. I'm the bald dude. There's probably a piano in the picture somewhere. They can go to my website, gregoryoffner.com. And they'll get directed to that, I think, once they get the, you know, the video series. But would love to connect if people have questions, if they want to share a story of a difficulty or a success that they're having. I'd love to hear about it. And I'm super grateful to get to talk to you, Josh. This has been a really fun conversation.
Yeah, this has been fun. And to be honest with you, it went in a bunch of different directions that I didn't think it would go. But I think it always goes the way it's supposed to go, right?
Yeah.
And so just ending off, I appreciate you coming on and sharing your story, right? And the gratitude that I can see and I can feel on you now from going through those different adversities and fighting through it and not allowing you to hold you back is amazing. And now you can help others do the same. And so appreciate you adding value to our show. And with that being said, go connect with Greg. I looked at his LinkedIn, his Instagram, even YouTube. He has different things on there. And he shares a powerful message. So go connect with him, and go and continue to follow his journey.
Thanks, Josh.
Perfect.
Our brand design and strategy is by Tessa at 5footstudios.com. You can also follow her on Instagram at 5footstudios. Our music is by Lakey Inspired. Go ahead and subscribe so that you never miss an episode. And click the 5 stars to give us a rating. And most importantly, keep playing Injury.